Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Dedicated to Edgar Degas, 1834 to 1917, in the centennial year of his death, Volume 3 of the Conservation Division's biennial journal, Factor, Conservation, Science, Art History, focuses on the tremendous wealth of works by Degas in the National Gallery of Art collection. The first to feature the work of a single artist, this issue includes essays by conservators, scientists, and curators. It presents insights into Degas' working methods in painting, sculpture in wax, and bronze, and works on paper, as well as a sonnet he wrote to his Little Dancer. The gallery has the third largest collection in the world of work by Degas, comprising 21 paintings, 65 sculptures, 34 drawings, 40 prints, 2 copper plates, and 1 volume of soft ground etchings. Its extensive Degas holdings and conservation resources have inspired not only groundbreaking gallery exhibitions, such as Degas the Dancers, 1984, Degas at the Races, 1998, Degas Little Dancer, 2014, and Degas Cassette, 2014, but also exhibitions around the world. For the public symposium, held as a centenary tribute on September 22, 2017, Kimberly Schenck presented an overview of Degas as a printmaker, highlighting works in the gallery's collection, including his preparatory drawing used for his most important etching project, Mary Cassatt at the Louvre.
Degas is one of the most highly regarded printmakers of the 19th century. Although sporadic, his printmaking activities spanned almost 40 years, from 1856, when he first became involved in the French etching revival, until his final lithographs made in 1892. During the 1870s, he was so immersed in printmaking that his friend, the artist Marcelin Desboutin, declared, "Degas is no longer a friend, a man, and artist. He is a zinc or copper plate, blackened with printer's ink, and the plate and man are flattened together by his printing press, whose mechanism has swallowed him completely." This afternoon, I will present an overview of Degas as a printmaker, highlighting works in the collection of the National Gallery of Art, which will be bordered in blue. I will also discuss my technical investigation of Degas' most important printmaking endeavor, Mary Cassatt at the Louvre. Instead of thinking of printmaking as only a means of reproducing an image, 19th century artists viewed etching as a distinct artistic medium. They investigated complex etching techniques, inking methods, and types of papers. Their hero was Rembrandt, whose extensively reworked copper plates and printed sometimes on exotic Japanese and Chinese papers. Indeed, Degas' early etched portraits of the artist Joseph Turny from 1857 and his sister Marguerite from 1860 appear inspired by Rembrandt's portraits, such as his self-portrait with wife Saskia and his studies of heads. For these early portraits, Degas, like Rembrandt, drew freely on the copper plate as if it was a sketch pad. Although instead of using a pencil, he used a pointed metal stylus. And like Rembrandt, Degas printed the portrait of his sister on a Chinese paper. For those of you not familiar with printmaking processes, I hope some of the slides will be helpful. To make an etching, strong acid is used to bite into areas of unprotected metal. After the plate is bitten, the acid-resistant ground is removed and the plate is ready for printing. Ink is spread on the plate and the excess removed from the surface, making sure the grooves or recesses remain filled with ink. A dampened sheet of paper is placed on top of the plate, which sits on the flat bed of an etching press. The heavy pressure of a large metal roller transfers the ink to the paper. The printed image on the paper is in reverse of that on the printing matrix. Unlike his straightforward line etchings, Degas' innovative prints of the 1870s combine various tonal techniques. In Dancers in the Wings from 1877, he layered hatched lines of various densities with coarse and fine particles of aquatint, a tonal etching technique made by coating the plate with acid-resistant resin particles. On the screen are two different impressions printed by Degas that document deliberate changes made to the copper plate. These are called states. A fourth state of the plate is on the left, and the final eighth state on the right. Viewing different states or stages in the development of a printmaking matrix allows us, as well as it did Degas, a means of evaluating the impact his changes made on the image. As you can see, the dancers are more clearly delineated in the last state, and the setting is more resolved. There is now a fifth dancer, and the diagonal at the upper left echoes the shape in the foreground. The 1870s marked an extremely productive and inventive period for Degas. Not only did he produce over 20 etchings in innumerable states, he also pursued other printmaking processes, in particular the monotype. Degas was introduced to the monotype in the mid-1870s by his longtime friend, the amateur artist Ludovic Lepic. Pictured on the right is Lepic's monotype from 1866, an affectionate portrayal of the furry dog in the collection of the Baltimore Museum of Art. Degas' first monotype, the Ballet Master, was probably printed in Lepic's studio using his large plate and press. In monotype, an image is produced with greasy printer's ink applied to a smooth surface, typically an unworked printing plate, and manipulated using brushes, rags, and blunt tools. Because monotypes do not employ a printing matrix, as does etching, only one, possibly two to three impressions can be made, and each subsequent pull is less dense with ink. To make the ballet dancer, Degas first covered the bare plate with printing ink and then selectively removed areas to create a range of lighter tonalities. The distinct marks of a stiff bristle brush going through the viscous ink can be seen at the top left. To define the dancer's arms and costume, Degas drew into the ink with the tip of a brush handle. In the detail at the bottom right, you can see how he modeled the dancer's foot with his fingertips. After the ink was no longer wet, but still somewhat tacky, he modified dark passages with white pastel. Degas frequently layered pastel over monotype, using the black image as a base, or so to speak, an underdrawing. In ballet dancers, he covered the monotype almost entirely with thick, colorful strokes of paint and pastel. Chunks of pastel can be seen in some of the paint, indicating Degas crushed up sticks of various colors and mixed the powder with water and possibly an adhesive. He carefully outlined the dancer's features with a sharpened black Conté pencil to help distinguish them from the blended colors of the ambiguous stage setting. Ballet Dancers relates to the etching Dancers in the Wings, both from 1877. Degas often revisited motifs or compositions in different media. In both images, the dancers weave between props of stage scenery. The location of the audience is clearly defined in the monotype, whereas the etching is more abstract, and the vantage point of the audience and the viewer are difficult to determine. Around the same time that Degas began experimenting with monotypes, he tested his hand at making lithographs. Lithography is often commended as the printmaking process most closely akin to drawing. The artist draws on a limestone block with greasy crayons or ink called touche. The stone is then chemically treated, inked, and printed. Degas structured this striking composition by thoughtfully positioning patterns of light and dark. The uprights of the stage, the bright globes of the gaslights, and the silhouettes of the audience's black hats. Yet he also convincingly depicted the professional singer, Mademoiselle Becat, and the shimmering prisms of the chandelier. For this lithograph from the Museum of Fine Arts Boston, Degas neatly arranged three freshly printed monotypes of Mademoiselle Becat onto a lithography stone while the greasy ink was still wet. They were run through a press to transfer the ink from the monotypes to the stone. One of the original monotypes is in the National Gallery's collection, pictured on the right. It appears pale and uneven because most of the ink was transferred to the stone. Unlike the Ballet Master, in which Degas started with an inked plate, here he diluted the stiff etching ink with solvent, making it more fluid, and applied it with a brush. Comparing the monotype to the resulting lithograph, you can see how Degas enhanced the transferred image on the stone, thus strengthening the composition. In 1879, Degas, Mary Cassatt, Camille Pissarro, and other artists began working on etchings for the first issue of the unrealized journal Le Jour et la Nuit, Day and Night, that was to highlight prints picturing the painterly effects of light and shadow. Degas' contribution, Mary Cassatt at the Louvre, the Etruscan gallery, depicts two women viewing an Etruscan sarcophagus encased in a vitrine. Mary Cassatt stands to the side of her seated sister Lydia, who holds a small book. Possibly concurrent with the Etruscan gallery, Degas produced a second plate, Mary Cassatt at the Louvre, the Paintings Gallery, that incorporated a more daring composition in which the figures overlap and the direction of the standing figure has been transposed. The prominent column at the left emphasizes the verticality of the composition. Both prints are similar in proportions to two different formats of Japanese woodcut prints. Shikishiban, a square format, and Hosoban, a vertical format, which typically depicts a single figure or two overlaid figures. Degas collected ukiyo-e prints and incorporated their pictorial devices and subject matter into his own work. These two prints are by the 18th century master Suzuki Haranobu from the Museum of Fine Arts Boston. Degas used the graphite sketch on the left to produce both prints of Mary Cassatt at the Louvre. The drawing is closely aligned to a fully developed pastel at the Louvre Miss Cassatt from a private collection, which is composed of several joined sheets of paper. In the drawing, Degas first determined the massing of the seated figure with numerous loosely laid in graphite pencil marks resembling scribbles. Here you can see how many times he's kind of placed Lydia. He continually drew over and refined both figures' contours, erasing portions of them as he worked. The grids ruled over the two figures aided Degas in placing the forms onto the copper plate and onto the sheets of paper for the pastel. Indeed, the edges of the papers pieced together in the pastel approximate some of the grid lines in the drawing. To make the prints, Degas placed the drawing on the copper plates coated with a soft, waxy ground and traced the figures using a fine pointed stylus, which indented the paper but did not leave an obvious mark. Where pressed with the metal stylus, the paper pulled the tacky ground from the plate, exposing bare metal, which was then bitten with acid. Because of its immediacy, this technique, known as soft ground etching, was popular with painter-etchers like Degas, who wished to produce effects in etching similar to those possible in drawing. The ground stuck to the drawing paper on the verso, and thus provides a record of the marks Degas transferred to the etching plates. The darker ground relates to the lines he traced onto the plate to make the Etruscan gallery, whereas the lighter ground corresponds to the paintings gallery. On the left is a first state of the Etruscan gallery. Degas shifted the spatial relationship between the two figures as he traced them onto the plate. After etching the soft ground lines, he shaded the women's dresses, in particular Mary Cassatt's dark suit, by incising into the bare metal using a metal tool, a technique known as dry point. Here is the first state on the left, the last of nine states of the plate in the middle, and the canceled printing plate on the right, all three from the National Gallery's collection. After the first state, Degas added the vitrine with the Etruscan sarcophagus and shelves of antiquities by tracing other drawings, now lost, to the plate coated with soft ground. By the final state, he had fully developed the setting with layers of lines and range of aquatint tones. On the left is a first state of the paintings gallery from the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. On the right is the verso of the drawing. Degas transposed the position of the standing Cassatt in the print. How he did this is unclear, though probably using tracing paper. After making the soft ground etching, he laid out the gallery setting using dry point lines and shapes of tonal aquatint. The shelves at the top right in the first state suggest Degas started the plate with a different setting in mind than what is present in the later state on the right. He scraped away the lines of the shelves and introduced a painting with wainscoting below. Also in the first state, and not in later ones, is the tip of a second foot peeking out beyond Lydia's skirt. It is present in soft ground residue on the verso of the drawing, but is not drawn in graphite on the front. When Degas traced the drawing onto the plate covered with soft ground, he also drew a second foot and shaded Lydia's dress using only the stylus, which does not leave a dark mark. Looking carefully at the drawing at an oblique angle and in raking light, a faint, sparkly, slightly indented line of the second foot becomes visible. In this detail, you can also see how the pressure of the stylus compressed the graphite marks, making the traced lines reflect the light more brightly. These are only three of the 22 states of the paintings gallery. Degas constantly reworked this plate, adding new marks while removing others, at times seeming more obsessed with process and the effects of his changes than in completing the final image. Already by the third state from the Yale University Art Gallery pictured in the center, Degas had developed the final composition. Between this state and the 12th on the left, he darkened areas with more etching while lightening other areas by scraping or burnishing away marks. He changed even the most minor details. For example, the buttons on Lydia's skirt. Barely visible in the first state, two in the third state, and now only one bright, shiny button. The lithographs of 1891-92 mark Degas' last efforts in printmaking. The lithograph on the left started as a monotype transferred to a stone, reworked, and later enlarged. For the print at the top right, Degas took an impression from a fourth lithograph, and while the ink was wet, transferred it to a stone, thereby changing the orientation of the figure. And the lithograph at the bottom right started as some kind of transfer, though we do not know what kind, but then was transformed with extensive crayon work and scraping done directly to the stone. These final lithographs epitomize Degas as a printmaker, his tendency to revisit the same composition or motif in different media, his experimentation with various processes, and his constant revision of the printmaking matrix with additive and subtractive techniques, always searching for resolution. Thank you very much.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.